Hey guys, it's Mark Potter again with a new episode of Brushstrokes, a podcast powered by Canvas Magazine. Guys, today's guest is Brian Broudis of the Broudis Group. Brian has written a book called High Impact Leadership, and he has gone through some trials and tribulations in his life and has become a well-known and renowned coach that can speak to the ever-changing environment slash landscape and what it means to leadership. And Brian's whole focus is really on personal mastery, personal leadership. And that's kind of what we have to go through to become leaders and instigators in this day and age. He talks a lot about moving from the industrial age mindset of command and control into the connection age mindset of influence and persuasion. So it was right up our alley, and I am really, really excited about the conversation. Today's episode is brought to you by Conduit Incorporated. Visit www.conduit-inc for all your custom publishing needs. If they ain't biting, catch them with custom content. So listen, guys, this conversation is one you're really going to enjoy. I was thrilled about it. He is a pretty thoughtful guy. He's got some great free content on thebroadestgroup.com. He's got a great podcast himself. So I'll speak more of that in the outro. And without further ado, let you listen to a little of my conversation with Brian Broudis. Enjoy. Brian?
Yes.
So we're going to try this again, huh?
Yeah.
I can't even tell you how sorry I am. For those of you who listen to this, Brian and I have already done this once before, and yours truly had some technical difficulties. So let me get that out of the way and tell you how sorry I am for screwing that up.
No worries, no problem.
I do not claim to be a technical master, and at least on a selfish level, it gives me another chance to talk to you.
Yes, same here.
And although our listeners don't get a chance to hear the first one, it was really, really outstanding. Probably one of the better ones we've done. And so we got a lot of pressure on us to see if we can replicate that.
Yeah. Well, I think we can do it.
We can. How are things going?
Great. It's a beautiful Friday, breezy, fall, cool, dry day.
Nice.
I'm looking out my window, woods, forest right in back of my house. Beautiful.
All right, so we're counting our blessings is what you're saying.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, yeah. Gratitude. Yep.
I love it. And that's kind of where we left off last time, because we talked a lot about change and I think I relayed to you at the time that our industry has gone through a lot of change. Heck, every industry has, and you specifically deal a lot with that, and I think that you'll probably talk to us a little bit about what you've done in your life and what you write about, and so speak to me a little bit about change in general and what you've seen in recent years.
Yeah, recent years. So what I see is change happening. You know, everybody talks about change, you know, right? It's a very easy topic. Oh, the technology, oh, this, oh, that, you know, the kids today, all that. But, you know, what I don't see and what I've noticed is leaders, people, team members even, keeping up with that change. You know, sure, change is going on all around us.
Right.
But have you changed?
Right.
Have you adapted your thinking? Have you become more open-minded? Have you shifted your perspectives? Or even just, have you opened yourself to the possibility of shifting your perspectives?
Right.
We can't do what we used to do. We can't, it's not an assembly line anymore. You can't just order people to work, command them to do what they're supposed to do, and expect them to do it. It's not going to happen today.
Right. Right. Yeah, it really is. You know, it's funny. I just traveled, and I was just talking about this whole idea around change, and that talk is cheap. And it's funny because this is kind of the focus of what you discuss, is that, you know, we could talk about all the dynamics that have changed around us, but at the end of the day, there's one place that the change has to start, and that's with you, right?
That's exactly right. You know, that's what my strong suit is, execution. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I tell people all the time, the books I read, you know, when I do a talk or I do a workshop, what did you read to get where you are? And, you know, the implication is that I read this book and it sunk in and I became what was in that book. But I applied what was in that book. And the power is, apply it in your own way, your own interpretation. What do you take from that material? And then how are you going to use that material? You don't have to use it specifically what it's written black and white in word, but what's your interpretation and what are you going to do with that?
Mm-hmm.
One guy said to me, one young fellow I was coaching said, you know, but that book is so huge and there's so much in it. And I said, well, what if you did 5%?
Yeah.
And it stopped him in his tracks. Execution, you don't have to be Einstein. I make the analogy sometimes. I say, you know, not Einstein, but MacGyver.
Right.
You just figure things out. What's going to work for you? Pull that sentence out. Pull that chapter out and just focus on that chapter. You know what you need. Just take that piece. And the big thing is to apply it at work. You know, so what you read and what you study and what you recognize as what's needed, take that and apply it. Try it. It's not going to work, as you know, Mark. It's not going to work like a textbook scenario. It's, mm-hmm. You're working with people. You're working with life. We don't. Life doesn't follow flow charts or leadership models. But when you focus and put your mind to applying with some of the stuff that you've read, you're going to find that it works.
Well, I mean, it speaks to a couple of things, Brian. One is how conditioned we are. It's interesting that people in general, it's almost like, you know, they do the work. Let's say they go to school, they go to college, they graduate, they get the job, and they kind of get into the wheel of life, and they stop. You know, there's this, not this growth mindset. And that's one issue, right? That's one big issue, is that we're so conditioned. And you know, I want you to kind of speak to that and how you break free of that. And then the other part is being well read. You know, you read constantly, but in today's world, we have this world that's pushing us away from that. And you know, I talk to my kids about it constantly, saying, you know, you're smart, but you're not well read. So we have there's a couple factors right there, right? This, the conditions that we're locked into. Speak to that and how we break free, and then speak to the power of reading.
Sure. So the condition is what society gives you. It's the societal norms. It's the communal language at work. It's the narrative that we all hear. It's the gathering of the water fountain after the meeting and complaining because you didn't speak up at the meeting.
Right.
And, you know, it works on you. You make a choice about that. You don't even know you made a choice. It's amazing. Yes, so how do you get out of that? Well, first of all, you have to recognize it doesn't work. First of all, you have to recognize that's not what you want. I went to a executive leadership training when I was working. I was really elated to go to this, be selected and go to executive leadership training. And when I got in there and started hearing some of the stories, I was really disappointed. You know, these other leaders wanted the high-paying jobs with high levels without any direct reports. Mm-hmm. They wanted. I was so disappointed because I wanted to get into leadership to make a difference, to make a change, to help those people who are misguided.
Mm-hmm.
So what I recognized about that conditioning is I don't want to be part of that conditioning. I don't want to be. I'm out, standing out separately because I want to influence myself. I want to condition myself. That's sort of a catchphrase. If you don't condition yourself, you're being conditioned by other things in life. So that's what the reading does. The reading is a different view. And so it's textbooks, maybe, but a lot of the people have written these books, like me. I've been down that slope before. I've been to that leadership meeting before. I've been to that training. I've been where you want to go. So you take those readings, find what's important to you, find what's valuable to you, and apply it to your life.
Right.
And that's what I did. I'm always looking for people like Lincoln, like Ben Franklin. You know, Ben Franklin was working on the Constitution. He was 81 years old. Those kinds of people are anchors. And those guys, I read deeply about both of them, and they weren't always who they were. They developed. They were a little loose cannons in their youth. If you read deeply about those gentlemen, you'll find out. Ben Franklin was on a road to disaster, and a Quaker friend pulled him aside and said, "You're not going to have any life at all. You're not going to have any social life if you keep berating people when you're right." He was very smart. When you rub their nose in it and you gloat about your intelligence. And that's when he came up with those 13 virtues that he wanted to work on. He made that little chart, and he X'd each day that he hit the mark.
Mm-hmm.
He developed his own personal development plan because somebody that really cared about him pulled him to the side and said, "You're going to fail if you don't change."
Right.
Something similar happened to Lincoln, yeah. So these guys, they didn't just come, young people think, oh, you know, these people just came to the table that way. They did not. They developed. And that was eye-opening for me, too. So you can influence your own conditioning, and reading does that.
Right. Yeah, and I think it's so fascinating because, you know, we have an industry that is so conditioned, so rooted in tradition. And you combine that with our motivations, you know, our motivations to either get to the finish line or, you know, take care of our whatever. We're all surrounded by our own motivations, taking care of our family, that kind of stuff. And so sometimes it's hard to let go. And you speak to personal mastery. And give a couple pieces of advice. Obviously, reading is a big deal and trying to pull some of that stuff out. But when people get to a point where they go, you know, what I'm doing is not really working. There's a lot. But by the way, there's a lot of people who will simply just put their head down and keep doing what they're doing, even though they're making less money. And maybe there's the margins on what they're doing are smaller. And they'll just kind of turn a deaf ear to it. But then there's those few that break free and they get creative and they take the pain, so to speak. And so what is it about them? What do you find is the core to that personal mastery to be able to the impetus to make that change?
Yeah, I think you're right, Mark. I think everybody wants more. Everybody wants more. If you would ask them, they would want more. And they don't just want to be good at their job. You know, it's like what you just said. We want inner peace. We want freedom. We want to have a contribution higher than ourselves. We want a larger contribution. We want to be perceived by the market as more valuable. So all those things, those are big things. Those are really, really big things. So what I see is why I talk about personal mastery is because the big things, the important things in life, the really valuable things, you know, not a paycheck, not a car. I'm talking about core values that no matter what goes on around you, you operate from this area of core that is your own weather. When it's cloudy, you make your own sunshine.
Yeah.
You know, you aren't directed by somebody's rejection of you. You know, you don't worry for outside accolades. You're self-contained, you're self-motivated, self-driven. That takes more than training. That takes more than a college degree. That takes more than just knowing or reading a book. That's personal mastery. That's where I got that. When I was young, struggling to create my life and get a job, both, because I had a tough upbringing. My father died when I was 15 years old. So I found myself in this shapeless fog of trying to get a job, trying to get out of high school, and trying to get my life going. And I grew up in western Pennsylvania. 25 miles of steel mill closed just as my father passed away suddenly. And there I was standing there. So I had an eagerness about me, and I had aspirations, and I had ambition, but I didn't have anything else. So that's when I started looking back. I didn't know it at the time, but I started working on mastery. I started working. I did go to college, obviously, but it was more than that, because, you know, you go to, like you said, you go to college, you get the job, and is that over?
Right.
No.
Yeah.
The really good people, I don't know if you know that Shark Tank, yeah. Alex Rodriguez was just on there. Alex Rodriguez is a new guy on there, and he said he was always looking for the next thing. Always looking for the next thing, and that's what I talk about. I'm always looking for the next thing, always preparing for the next thing. I view myself as like being in a slingshot, being pulled back slowly, waiting to launch for that next opportunity to come into view, and I just let go of the slingshot and I launch out. But I'm always preparing. So if you can visualize two circles, left and right, there's the one on the left. That's who I am right now. That's where I'm working, in that circle. And there's the one on the right. That's who I'm becoming. So I'm working on who I am, growing who I am, always feeding that, and then obviously feeding who I'm becoming. Those are those two circles, and that's what I did from a very young age, and I continue to do it. It works.
Right. Yeah, remember, who was the guy? Matthew McConaughey, he's the actor. Mm-hmm. I think he won, I don't know if he won an Oscar or whatever, but I'm not a big movie or media guy, but I remember he did some speech. It must have been the Oscar or something like that. And he talked about, chasing someone. And it wasn't anybody in particular. It was chasing this better version of himself, this constancy of chasing a better version of himself. I talk to my kids a lot about that. And I do think that is the recipe. You know, any progress in this world comes from these people that have great ambition and they're chasing a better version. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean chasing something at the expense of others. I think true success has got to be embody, a little bit of both. I mean, there's got to be something that there's a better version of yourself. And so, your whole idea around high impact leadership, you say it's very, very personal. Don't you? When it comes to leadership, because we do have a leadership issue, throughout the world right now, but specifically even in our industry, you need great leaders. You need remarkable leadership to kind of navigate the confusing times that we're in and the change. And so, right? I mean, it's something that it's chasing a better version of yourself first before you can lead others. Is it not?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That's well put. Better version of yourself. Your leadership development in the early days is personal development. There's no question about it. There's no question about it. Right now, we're in a less stable economy. We have a disrupted retirement system because of the less stable economy. More people are staying in the workforce longer. So now we have more generations in the workplace than ever. So, and we have more diversity on top of that than ever. So it's not going to work like it used to. You need to be strong as a leader. You need to be powerful. The three things that I work on in personal mastery when I coach people for personal mastery is to be stronger. I mean stronger in your core, stronger as a person, standing alone, more powerful. That means you give power to others, empowerment. And what you said with creativity, it's very similar. More resourceful.
Mm-hmm.
More resourceful. You can study I do a lot with conflict. So I go into a place and they studied the conflict management model. You can study conflict management models all day long, but if you don't have the strength to sit down face to face with a level 3 employee and move that employee to a level five, you're not leading your team very well. But to do that, to have that strength, you have to have that inside of you already, those core strengths that we talked about earlier. Right. That's why I always focus on working on the core, not these tangential five things leaders do every day. That's nice, and that's really, really inspiring sometimes, but that's not going to get you to have that conversation with those difficult people, what I call those adult conversations. You have to be strong. You have to be powerful. And, you know, even when you're that, when I was a leader, my heart was still racing in my chest, even though I was very good at what I did. I was a very good leader, very good supervisor. My heart still raced, because who wants to tell people they're not doing very well and they need to step up, or you're going to put them on an improvement plan as the first step to towards out the door?
Right.
Very difficult conversations, but we have to have those conversations. And, you know, most people are not, there's no malice. They're worried about their uncertainty. There's a lot of anxiety in the world today. Mm-hmm. So that's why we need those better leaders. We need those strong leaders who can sit down and listen, who can coach,
right,
who can advise, who has your and the company's better interest in mind. Oh, it's a lot of work. Oh, my goodness, it's work. And people, everyone is different. That's why you can't study a leadership model. You need to have that in you. You need to have that strength in you. You need to have the vocabulary, the tools. That's what a lot of young leaders don't have, tools. They don't have the tools. And a bad situation, a difficult employee, no tools, that's a cocktail for making bad decisions.
Right.
And that's a very, very difficult place to be.
Yeah.
For young managers, yeah.
Well, I mean, that's really interesting, because it is, it's again, going back to this idea of personal mastery and some of the core values that you've got to have. And I love the fact that you say there really is no recipe, because everybody's different. And you mentioned earlier, you know, kids today and the generations, and it seems like every presentation and that you see is, you know, talking about millennials and yada, yada, yada. Mm-hmm. But, you know, let's toss that aside. And, you know, I'm kind of getting tired of the whole, you know, age segregation. What you said is, look, there's a lot of different generations in the workforce, and everybody's so different already, but you've got way, people operate very, very differently. Different generations operate very differently. So speaking to, you know, leadership, you know, that's a big deal that you really can't use a one-size-fits-all mantra, right?
No, that's exactly right. And that's where the strength comes in. That's why I go to strength, power, and resourcefulness, because you do have all those people, and so they all have talent, mm-hmm, and they all have gifts, and everybody has something to contribute. So you as a leader, even in conflict situations, need to be able to pull that out.
Right.
Manage your team. Team management, it's a really big issue. It's huge. And, you know, when I read somewhere in, I taught as an adjunct. I taught leadership and change for a couple of years. And I read in one of the books, one of the textbooks, it said when offices are in conflict, they're about 17% productive. Mm-hmm. So think on your career where you've worked, where there were bad leaders, bad managers, and offices were in conflict. Just think if they were in a little less conflict, how much more productive they would be.
Yeah.
But that's the job of leaders, and that's really, really a big job, and it's getting harder and harder. And so that's why we need to be more sharper and better, just more on your game. You need to be on your game, and it's possible. You can do it. This is surmountable.
Mm-hmm.
But when I worked as a leader, I worked on myself every day, and that's where I came up with, it's on my website, my 10-minute leadership habit that I use for coaching now, because I always closed my door and got a hold of myself before I went out to a meeting, before I went to a evaluation, before I had whatever. and made sure I worked things out on my own before I took anything out to the crowd. Because if you find your leaders overreacting, setting the place on blaze because of one spark, mm-hmm. you look, I'm very analytical, so when I was working, I did that, and I would look, and why did the boss do that? Well, he or she obviously had something going on that I didn't know about internally, that this little impetus, this little event triggered so much more that was underneath the iceberg, as it were. Yeah, so you have to hide that. You have to be able to, that's what real leaders do. They put that stuff to rest, and they approach every situation fully present, every situation anew.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, listen, I want to come back to some of your history, because I think there's always great analogies, anecdotes, lessons within someone's history and what they've overcome. And you spoke a little bit to growing up in Western Pennsylvania. Before I come to that, though, let's stay on this one topic around all these different places and all these different people within the workforce and leadership. Trust seems to be a big issue, and maybe that's just on my mind in general, that we're in such a world, I feel like sometimes everybody's just trying to get their what they want, and everybody's just trying to get theirs, so to speak. And then you have all this technology that's allowing people to shelter themselves from others, and it's difficult to connect with people. And so trust, it seems to be, it's a scarce commodity right now. Speak to that in terms of where you think trust is, and how do you establish that?
Yeah, that's a really good point, because if you look, just look in your spam folder. Yeah. What they're trying to push, and absolutely. And, is your boss, is your leader out for himself or herself, or do they really have you in mind? And how much energy are you using to size that up, and how much energy are you not doing your work? I'm just not just working for the man, but focused on, this is another reason for mastery, personal mastery, helping yourself move forward. While you're working, preparing for that promotion in that other circle, while you're working on this job, and you spend energy worrying about should you trust your supervisor, should you trust your manager, should you trust your leader. I always say that from a leadership perspective, on your team, it's so much harder to regain trust. And that goes back to, don't blow up at your people and set the place ablaze, because it's much harder to re-earn trust and to repair damage than it is to just manage yourself better in those situations. As a leader, you're going to be put in all kinds of situations. I always say, you can't pick your crisis. You can't. There's no way. So you have to be prepared for anything to happen, because anything usually does happen.
Right.
And so you have to be prepared. That goes back to mastery. It goes back to those core strengths. Mm-hmm. You can't pick your crisis. There's no way. Things happen. Look at our country in today. When the election was going on, they were talking about how they're going to lead our country. No one anticipated the hurricanes, the fires. This is what leadership is. This is what how you're going to lead in those situations. So I try to, as a leader, as a coach, anytime I'm anywhere, I try to build trust every day. I try to make trust a momentum thing, where each day I add to it. If there's any day that you detract from it, then you have to work all the harder to re-earn it. And it's just no good. It's one step forward, two steps back.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not a good place to be for a leader. Not only for your company, your organization, productivity and profit and all that, but what kind of workplace are you creating?
Right.
You know, I had some really bad managers growing up, so I always said, when I become the leader, I'm going to create well-being at work. I want people to come to work and be happy. And if they're happy, they're probably going to do better. If they feel better, they're going to do better. And isn't that the truth? We all know it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Listen, go back to some of your history. So, you know, you grew up in Western Pennsylvania, and you and I have talked about that as I did as well. And, you know, you see the steel mills and shut down, and, you know, that part of the country is actually a great analogy, right? Somehow.
Yes, it is.
Somehow they've resurrected themselves and thought creatively and got out of the box and you know, they didn't shrivel up and die. They just kept pushing forward. So, but tell me about that. So how you've gotten to this point and starting your, the Broadus Group and writing your book and everything, you know, give us a little of your chronology.
Sure. So the town I grew up in, when my father died and, the mills closed, they started to take out traffic lights and replace them with stop signs. Traffic was reduced to such a trickle the red lights were no longer needed, and they were just going to use stop signs. And so it was the antithesis of growth. It was
right.
It was stagnant. It was so slow. So I couldn't see any growth outwardly. And again, Mark, I'm looking back and connecting the dots from where I am now. So I started creating some inward growth.
Mm-hmm.
And my neighbors and all the folks around told me that, you know, I'm going to go to college is what I said, and to all my neighbors and to small community members. And all my friends worked for the steel mill, and they were all laid off. But I said, I'm going to go to college. You need more than a college degree. This economy, a college degree isn't going to help you. So-and-so has a college degree, and so-and-so has a college degree, and they're delivering pizza. And that was all true. You know, that was all true. It was that situation. It was very, very barren.
Yeah.
But I went anyway. And I was in this shapeless fog too, because my father had just passed away. I had 8 brothers and sisters. Huh. So my mother went back to school to be a nurse, and my mother didn't have a lot of attention for me individually. So I was really on my own.
Right.
And so I was called to create my own personal life and create a productive and professional life. So I just really had to face reality. But I really had a burning desire to go. I had this ambition. It was really hard. So I worked on cars. I did some home repair work, and I took night classes. And I was still questioning, you know, is this college degree the right thing to do? And one of my professors was a serious literature professor, and he forced us to read all the classics, and the students were grumbling about, he was a very, you know, you've had those professors who were rigorous as heck.
Yeah.
And one day he just opened up and pounced on us, and he crossed his arm, and he walked back and forth in front of the class lecturing on how short-sighted it is to talk and complain about these classes. You're all in here because you're looking for something, and if you don't make a change right now, the tides of unemployment and factories closing is not going to stop. It's going to continue throughout your life in different forms, in one way or another. It's going to continue. There's only one surefire way to change, and that's to put your nose in those books and to become smarter and become educated. And that class really influenced me.
Right.
And I took it to heart. And he said, you're in this class to initiate the change and create a turnaround for yourself. Are you going to do it? Are you going to do it? And he said, if it's up to me, if it's to be, it's up to me. And right. I'll never forget that. And that was way back when. And really, that's what started me on changing. And I really dug my heels in, and I got a degree. And I got hired as a policeman. I thought, I got a job as a policeman, and got laid off. I took a civil service test. I was smarter. I passed the test, but I got laid off again. Future, for just more decline. It was more decline, Mark, that was just coming. So then I went back and I went back and got another degree, and then I got a job with the government and I moved out of the area. But when I go back, my friends are still there. The ones that told me that getting a college degree will never help you in this economy, they're delivering auto parts. You know, the city of Pittsburgh came back. They created internal growth. That's where I got that analogy.
Right.
When there's no growth outside, you start growing inside, making yourself more valuable to the market. You start growing.
Right.
They did that. So the city of Pittsburgh is doing fine, but the outlying areas are still struggling.
Sure.
There's a lot of houses. There's a lot of people, and the jobs are hard to get. My friends are still delivering pizza, delivering auto parts. But I left and continued my growth. Mm-hmm. And when I went back, I was talking to some of my friends. This was 10, 12 years ago. And one of my friends said, you know, you should be a coach. And that's when I started looking at being a coach. And I went back, I went to school, went to training to become a coach, mm-hmm. because of what I was trying to just share with them, what I did. It was... unofficial. I was just kind of sharing my story. How do I want to say it? Informally. That's
sure.
what I'm looking for.
Sure.
And the guy just, he's not a very deep guy. He delivers auto parts.
Right.
And he said, you should be a coach, Brian. You have some real, I'm not going to do what you say. But, it's funny, but you should be a coach.
Yeah.
So that's what started it all. And
well,
what I recognized, go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say that's fascinating because, think about that little nugget you just said. I mean, that's the rub, Brian. I mean, I'm listening to you tell me the challenges and what you've overcome and pushing forward and anything successful in our life was done that way. We took some pain, we overcame. It's our proudest moments. And I think we're in such a unique economy in a unique age that it's the first time that, 50-year-olds are having to reinvent themselves. And especially after a good long while of... Hey, once you got to a certain point in this world, you're just kind of coasting and you're looking forward to retirement and, I've got my 401k and, we've got, that's the condition of the past, let's say 20 years that we've lived in. And so it's funny because anything we've ever done well in our life, we overcame something. And now the world is telling us, oh, guess what? You don't get to ride off into the sunset. Everybody has to mm-hmm. keep doing that. And it's like we've forgotten that. And there are people who simply say, yeah, I don't have the energy or I don't want to do it. Or, look, we all go through that. And so historically, you've done that. And then you come back and you talk to this guy who essentially never did. He's telling you, oh, that's fantastic stuff. Yeah, I'm not going to do it. But I feel like that kind of just hit a nerve with me because I feel like I'm in the same boat where I tell some people, listen, we have people in our industry. You have to make some of these changes. I'm sorry, you do not get to coast into the sunset. It's frustrating because, you've gone through personal mastery, but you're trying to coach, and there's a lot of people that it just doesn't reach. Am I wrong in that assessment?
No, you're right. And it's the old saying from the East. When the student is ready, the teacher will appear.
Right.
And they just aren't ready, and they can't see what you see. I have read the books. This is that conditioning that we talked about going way back when you tell your kids about reading. That helps you see what is not readily apparent.
Yeah.
I did. I kept pushing, just like you described. And if I still push today.
Mm-hmm.
I have the energy because this is what I like. This is what my life is. I love leadership and growth, and I know it's possible for everybody. I just know it. I've seen people do it who you would think, oh my, they're going anywhere, but. They do it, and so I know it works. I know it's possible. So, If you can do that, like you're in your industry, whatever industry you're in, if you can be that one who continues to push, who continues to be enthusiastic, who continues to bring the higher skills of the 21st century in, influence and persuasion over command and direct, continue to grow, continue to push, even though you may not get what you want at the moment, you continue, you stay, you will get it, and you will be so valuable. Steve Martin said this, so good they can't ignore you.
Yeah. I just saw that somewhere. That's so funny. My kid pointed it out because I'm always telling him that, you know, when you're dealing with political issues and you're dealing with just a lot of noise and stuff, be good enough that they can't ignore you. That's and you know, make it a no-brainer, so to speak. That's pretty good. And I like the persuasion piece because we have had a world of command and control. And with all these new generations and the new kind of age that we're in, we are in a different place. You do have to be really empathetic and to be able to persuade and influence. And so that's a great point and probably another podcast unto itself. So, you know, you've been so gracious to be able to do this again. I let me ask you this because I want you to do a little shameless plug on your book, High Impact Leadership. Speak to how you came to this book. And, you know, obviously we don't want you to give all those secrets away because we want people to go find it. But tell me how you came to the book. Give us a couple tidbits from it. And then let us know how we can find it.
Mm-hmm. Sure. So there's more to life than profit. And I've started to study organizations and the really good organizations who have been around a really long time. And, you know, they just keep going. And I combined that with with the change that I see. And leadership is changing as fast as technology, at least the need for leadership, the new leadership. And so that's what started me on this book. And what people want, just like you said, the millennials, what people want out of businesses today, they want to pay the bills. They want to be employed. They want to contribute to something higher, something greater, just like we talked about. But they also want fulfillment. Mm-hmm. They want to be associated with a winner. Mm-hmm. They want to be able to sing the praises of their employer. Excuse me. Mm-hmm. There's a thing. I forget what Apple has. The attraction of their products.
Right.
It's amazing that they want to sing the praises of their employer. They want to be attached to something good, something that is not command control, something that is bigger. And so that's what my book is about, how you can do that. So how you can do that personally. The first part of my book talks about it's 10 action strategies for your ascent, high impact leadership, 10 action strategies for your ascent. The first part of the book talks about taking control of yourself, taking control of your mind and the mindset and your perspective. Because everything we talked about, Mark, is a perspective. Mm-hmm. It's a mindset. What are your assumptions about the world? So that's the first part of the book. And then the second part of the book are 5 ways to aim higher. How you can become the leader of you, like you talked about. You lead yourself first.
Mm-hmm.
Shift from reacting to responding. Composure is underrated these days. And if you come unglued, you erode trust.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the second part of the book. And then I close it with an epilogue, which is a story of a personal note from me on moving forward and how to do that and what to look for and how to stay committed and all that sort of thing. It's really a little deeper than I made it. It is it's a highly focused book, so right. there's a lot of things inferred. I say something like What we want out of life is deep, but what we get is superficial.
Right.
And so a lot of people, you have to spend some time thinking about that. Mm-hmm. What we get is what you said, a paycheck, the phoniness, but what we want is real connection to real leaders, real connection to other people. Mm-hmm. We want our leaders to know that they have our back. Mm-hmm. So I say that I don't go into that kind of depth, but if you're in the right place reading this book, you'll pick up on that.
Well, that's your next book. Look, I could probably talk to you for days because you keep spurring these things in me. I believe, for example, that the social networks out there are symptomatic of where we're at. And I told a friend of mine, I said, God, you've got the perfect life. And he says, what do you mean? Well, everything I see from you on Facebook, I mean, it's just the perfect life. And I thought, you know, I was being facetious, obviously. What I was pointing out to him was, that's all we're letting the world know. And so when you say, hey, this is what we want out of a job or an employment, you're right. I even deal with that, right? People that say, God, you know, people define themselves in some way by who they work for. Oh, I work for Apple, or I work for, and yet, you know, maybe some of the more soul enriching roles are working for someone like me, you know, and in a small company like Conduit. I'm hopeful that we're getting to a point where there is so much noise and there is so much superficiality. I don't know if that's a word, but you know what I'm talking about, is that there's so much of us putting ourselves out there that we don't even sometimes take the time. This goes back to personal mastery of finding out what really makes us go and what does enrich our souls. I believe that. And it's not easy because we do feel like, oh, we need the money. We need the Benjamins. We need the status, and we define ourselves by what other people think. And yet we go through that, and someday we wake up going, you know, what do I care what these people? I need something that's enriching and spiritual, if you will. So so while there is a lot of this noise, and what you're talking and preaching about on some level is this deeper. So I get it, you know, and I can even sense a little bit, you know, hey, I did this book and we've got this stuff and you want to kind of scream at the mountaintops. It's a lot deeper. You know, it's not as simple as ABC, what you said earlier. It's a deeper, more cathartic personal mastery, right?
Absolutely. Yes, exactly. And you know, as we talked about earlier with those leaders, to be able to have those difficult conversations when you're doing the personal mastery, that's that inner work that shows up in your outer work. So you're able to make a connection. I think a lot of people, a lot of leaders don't want to connect with their team. They're afraid.
Sure.
There's a lot of fear out there, a lot of tension, a lot of anxiety. And, you know, I don't believe in that. I believe in the other. If I would work in a place and you didn't believe in that, well, I'd try to bring you around or you can go somewhere else to work.
Yeah.
That's because Facebook is nice, Twitter is nice, but what people really want is what's real.
Sure. Yeah.
They want what's real. And if you're not showing that at some degree, some level, authenticity, I mean, we're all smart people. We can pick up on that. I mean, how many people have you shaken their hands and thought, yeah, I need to go wash my hands, because they're fake as the day is long. And we can see right through that.
Mm-hmm.
So I encourage everybody to become stronger, more powerful, and more resourceful. And then there's nothing to hide behind.
Mm-hmm.
There's no title to worry about. You just operate from that core of who you are. And boy, does the world respond to that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, Brian, I think we did it. I think this was even better than the one that I screwed up. But I can't thank you enough. I mean, it's so nice of you to come back on the program. And the thoughtfulness is obviously unquestioned. I just think it's great stuff. And I can't say thank you enough. The book is High Impact Leadership. It's 10 Action Strategies for Your Ascent. It's Brian Broaddus of the Broaddus Group. You can visit him at thebroaddusgroup.com, and you can grab the book on amazon.com as well. So you're the man. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Mark.
Brian, we'll be in touch, okay?
Yes, thank you.
All right, buddy. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Hey guys, I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Brian Broaddus of the Broaddus Group, and I am going to go out on a limb and think that you guys probably enjoyed that as much as I did. He is someone I could talk to all day. I love the fact that he understands that the world has changed, that it demands a new kind of leadership, but it demands more of ourselves. Take note of some of the things that he said. First and foremost, in my mind, is this idea that you are the instrument. And that's a big deal because we get so focused on what we do each and every day, our J-O-B, if you will, that we forget to sharpen the saw. We forget to reinvest in ourselves, to read, to go places we've never gone, to have some experiences. That's the key to being able to lead. We have to reinvest in ourselves. Your value is not the products that you sell. The value is, in fact, you. So his 3 points after that, be stronger, be powerful, be resourceful. All really, really magical stuff. But if you don't want to listen to this podcast again, grab his book, High Impact Leadership. You can find it at thebroaddusgroup.com. Again, my thanks to Brian. My thanks to Conduit Incorporated. Visit www.conduit-inc.com for all your custom publishing needs. Remember, if they ain't biting, catch them with custom content. Guys, thanks so much. And as always, be the buffalo. Take care.